Hello and welcome to Baseball Talk right here on Whiteman TV. I'm Steve Fitzsimmons along with Andy Clark and Jamie Bennett tonight. Paul and Rob are off on other assignments, so we'll be back with you in another week or two. And guys, we have a ton of things to talk about tonight, not the least of which was the Major League Baseball trade deadline that happened. And of course, the Toronto Blue Jays were the most active team, probably of any team. Now, some of their moves weren't as impactful maybe as some of the things like the Houston Astros did. But Jamie, I mean, what were just your general, we'll talk about each individual trade, but what were your general thoughts on just what the Jays did?
Well, it was really an opportunity for them to flat out sell whatever they could. And to a degree, they did that. I know we're going to get to a point later on in the show where we talk about some of the non-moves. I was surprised that they held on to Ken Giles and Justin Smoke. This is a team that's clearly not competitive this year, is unlikely to be competitive next year. So to bring in some young, controllable talent for those guys who probably aren't long-term pieces would have been a bonus. But they certainly got some negative feedback from fans on trades like with Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez, a couple of guys who were well-beloved by the fan base. So personally, I was a little bit disappointed that they didn't bring in any real blue chippers. But I guess we've got to wait and see, just because these guys are well-respected within baseball, and there's a reason for that.
Andy, I think some of the problem as well seems to be the messaging by the Toronto Blue Jays to their fans from their general manager and president being pretty poor with how they're getting their message across about what they're trying to do. You know, almost denigrating some of the things that their predecessors had did to make this club a good club. And basically, they've wiped the slate clean with anything that Anthopoulos basically did for this baseball team. And now this is really their show, and we're going to see how this plays out, but it's really scorched earth. But I feel like the messaging of just trying to get their message across, you know, they almost just put things the wrong way to fans. I think it kind of rubbed them the wrong way.
And we've seen this play out both in baseball and other sports such as hockey, where sometimes some of the moves seem to be motivated more by wiping out your predecessor's legacy than it is about necessarily the best move for a team. Whether that's what's going on here, I don't know. The thing with Stroman is he's a polarizing figure. Some people love how he is passionate and outspoken. And let's be honest here, I think something that had some merit with Stroman beyond his pitching ability is he very clearly wanted to be in Toronto. And he made that open. And, you know, we've just gone through the whole Kawhi Leonard drama and all that stuff. And there's something to be said for someone who's happy to be here.
Performing well, too.
And performing well. You know, he's an all-star for them again this year. And I find a lot of fans buy into this whole, it's either, you know, oh, tank everything or scorch earth everything. But at the end of the day, if you have some good assets that you have control over, and I know Stroman, they don't have long-term, but it's not like his contract's up at the end of this year, if I'm correct, right?
That's right.
Still have control. He's still pitching well. The one thing they wildly and desperately need is pitching. You know, I wouldn't necessarily have been as quick to pull the trigger. Now, having said that, Anthony Kay is a fairly good prospect. Some of the other deals they made, I don't know if they got the return that I would have liked to see, but at least they did get someone who, you know, out of University of Connecticut was like 260 strikeouts in college, and he was a first-round pick. So he has some potential to develop. And he's also ingratiated himself with fans already with, you know, the social media.
Right.
Basically, I forget how he put it, but that whole, you know, tell me about Canada.
Tell me what I need to know.
Yeah, and he's being all playful with, oh, I'm not going to add another letter to the word color, and I'm not going to put pineapple on my pizza. So it's nice that he's
having some fun with it.
He's building a connection with the fans, because I think definitely Stroman, some people hated him, but a lot of people loved him, and he connected with the fans. So...
Okay,
this one remains to be seen what we get from Anthony Kay, really.
Well, let's dive into that. So Marcus Stroman, as you said, went to the Mets along with $2.5 million for some inexplicable reason. We have to pay to get Anthony Kay.
Take our all-star.
Yeah. Take our all-star and give us two prospects, and we'll give you $2.5 million to pay him as well. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. But anyway, as you said, Anthony Kay, a 24-year-old left-hand pitcher who was the fourth-ranked prospect as judged by MajorLeagueBaseball.com. In the Mets system, along with 18-year-old Simeon Woods Richardson, who is their sixth-ranked prospect, and you know, through two leagues this year, 3-9 with a 5.16 earned run average, but he does have 102 strikeouts in 82 innings. So he's a flamethrower at NK.
He's in double A. If I'm correct, he went to the Fisher Cat.
Right.
Yeah.
And K, 1.49 in earned run average in 12 starts in double A, a 6.61 earned run average in triple A over 31 and a third innings. Pretty small sample size. I'm not going to beat up the young man for that. But I mean, the puzzling thing for me, Jamie, on this one, it's not so much what they got. It's when you extrapolate where this team's going to be a couple of years from now, they're going to be looking for a controllable young, good pitcher like Marcus Stroman, and they're not going to be able to get a guy like that because you know, of where they're at in their cycle. When they clearly had a guy like that, that they probably could have got another 4 or 5 year deal with.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I mean, something I read online was as soon as you trade Marcus Stroman, you start looking for the next Marcus Stroman, and that's I think what you've just said sort of hit the nail on the head with. The other thing that was surprising to me was Marcus Stroman's destination, ending up with the New York Mets. The New York Mets are sort of, I don't know that many people consider them a top contender right now.
They're a sad sack, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. So if you want to be blunt about it.
They've had a little blip recently, though. Like,
yeah, and yeah, I mean, like Marcus Stroman is from that area. I mean, it's sort of a homecoming for him. But don't forget, too, I mean, this is a guy that was passionate about being in Toronto. Like Andy said, I mean, he's a little bit of a polarizing figure, but you definitely couldn't question his passion about the city, the fans, and the experiences. Now, let's turn that around, though, and when he was told he was going to the New York Mets, I understand he had a fairly negative reaction to that, and the Blue Jays actually had kept their locker room closed to media as a result of that reaction. I think Marcus Stroman was keen to go to the New York Yankees, and he had basically said, as far as I know, that he was basically made to pitch for the New York Yankees. You know, the bright lights, big crowd, you know, big expectations. So it's a puzzling move on a bunch of levels. Now, when you talk about getting the return, do any of us really know what these guys are going to be in 2 or 3 years or no. 5 or 10 years?
No, and that's to the end. I made a comment on social media that one thing I know for sure in this is that the AA Fisher Cats are one of the big winners in the Blue Jays trade deadline.
Yes.
We know the New Hampshire Fisher Cats in AA are looking really good right now. Whether that translates to the big leagues in a few years, I don't know.
I will say this. I think this trade, and we'll talk about some of the other ones, but I think this trade, the fans, they're not beating up the Jays quite as much on this trade as some of the other ones because, I mean, these guys are young guys with potential. 24 years old, though getting a little long in the tooth for a prospect, but you know, still time. Pitchers maybe sometimes take a little bit longer to develop than position players typically. So,
but let's not forget too that there were reports that other members of administration in the MLB were reportedly upset with this trade because it set a very low bar for what they expected for their players in return.
Yeah, there's certainly other GMs that were like, "Are you serious? This is all we're going to get?" Or all we have to pay. I mean, the contenders were loving that because the prices went down significantly. But yeah, there definitely was no feeling out there that the Mets overpaid, that's for sure, for Marcus Stroman by anyone in Major League Baseball. That was kind of off the record, on the record, whichever.
And I mean, you get number 4, number 6 from the New York Mets. That's number 4, number 6 from the New York Mets. And that's another thing that I read. You know, this isn't, you know, number 4, number 6 in baseball. This is number 4, number 6 from a team that's struggled for a number of years and has a little bit of a is in a little bit of a difficult place. Now, I mean, is it different if you get somebody like Gleyber Torres? Or there was another pitcher they were looking for the Yankees whose name escapes me right now. But it's just, I don't know, it sort of blows my mind on a number of levels how this trade came together and what it ended up being.
Well, and you bring up a great point, Jamie, is, you know, the asking price, at least, you know, behind the scenes, it seems, from the Yankees was dramatically more than what the Toronto Blue Jays ended up with this. And Andy, I mean, you know, do you charge more for a team in your division than a team out of your league? It clearly looks like what happened here.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm going to bring 2 points together too that Jamie talked about the outburst that, you know, after
emotional
was traded, the emotional outburst. Now, you never know when you get everything secondhand, but from the accounts that did come out, they actually said that it wasn't so much him complaining about going to the Mets apparently he said he reacted strongly to how the communication from the organization worked. And that goes to what you were asking before about the management of the Jays maybe communicating with their fans, because that was maybe a case where they didn't communicate well, where he had a bit of a shock factor of where he ended up. Maybe, I don't know all the details, but he basically was putting it out there that he didn't like how they shared or didn't share information with him.
Well, I think the one thing that he mentioned, and I think he's completely believable in this, is that, one, they didn't make a contract offer of any kind, and two, they didn't even congratulate him on making the All-Star team. And I think that was a little bit ridiculous of Jay's management to not congratulate their player on making the All-Star team. I find that shocking, but somehow not surprising, given their communication skills, or lack thereof, that we've seen publicly at least.
Well, yeah, and they said that when they publicized from the organization that they might try and sign him long-term, and then he went on Twitter and said, news to me.
News to me.
I haven't heard anything.
So that was that perhaps a ploy on their part to try and drive up some price tag on what they could potentially get for him? So.
There was also the consideration that the New York Mets might then flip him to the San Diego Padres, who were reportedly interested as well, or Noah Syndergaard. Mm-hmm. So then that would have made the Blue Jays look a little bit silly had the Mets gotten a better return than the Blue Jays did.
Now, did Syndergaard move?
No, he stayed, yeah.
So, because that's another factor for Stroman, because if you look at this year, he has been pretty much completely alone. Because Sanchez, you know, has had his issues until he went to the Astros, and then Boriaki was injured. So he really has been the guy. So he's facing up the premier matchups. But now he's going to a lineup with Syndergaard. He's not necessarily going to be facing off against every team's ace all the time.
Right.
That's going to perhaps put him in a bit of a better situation too.
Think about pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting to see long-term how this all plays out for both teams in this particular situation. Let's move on and talk about the Eric Sogard deal. So Eric Sogard, if we go back to the start of the year, he was basically signed to a minor league contract and ended up making the Jays and doing extremely well for them. 10 home runs, hit 300 in 73 games. But you know what? Let's put this in perspective for a moment. Like, he's played extremely well for the Jays. There's no question about this.
Had a 2-home run game the other night again.
Exactly. But he's 33 years old, and in 657 career games, he has a batting average of .247 and only 21 home runs. So he has 10 of them this year, but only 21 in those other 500 and some games, 155 runs batted in and 41 stolen bases. So a career utility man for sure, who basically has found his stride at 33 years old on a team that's not really playing well, and was, for me, a pretty nice story for the Toronto Blue Jays. But they get two players to be named later, and we don't know exactly what that entails. But, I mean, Jamie, I feel like this was probably a guy that, for getting, if the two players to be named later or anything at all, this was maybe a move they had to do.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not unheard of in any sport that you get a rather journeyman player who has a good season when there's not much expected of the team, because they're able to take on a larger role. And I think that's what we saw with Eric Sogard and Freddie Galvis, who's, of course, still with the team. But this was a sell high opportunity for the Blue Jays, because it was a virtual, like, a nominal investment, came in on a minor league deal, and then he had a good year, and they were able to sell him off. So as long as they get something that turns into a building block, whether that's a building block that plays for them, ends up in a different trade to bring in somebody, you know, stronger or something like that, then I feel like they won that transaction or series of transactions.
Well, here's what we don't know is, of the players to be named later, we don't know who they are.
Not yet.
Are we talking, like, are these guys that are in rookie ball?
There's not much speculation out there about who these guys are, really, which is interesting.
There would be a lot.
But, you know, there'll be A or AA guys, I'm sure. My understanding is there's a list of four players that the Jays have to select from, and they get to select two, and they have somewhere between 30 and 45 days to do that after the culmination of the trade. So, you know, I'm sure we'll hear mid-September that they've selected whoever they've selected.
So here's my whole read on the Sogard thing, because, yes, I can understand that he can walk away at the end of the season. It's a one-year contract. He's played much better, so he's probably going to have interest. He's going to have people offering. So the price on him next year is going to be higher. But here's the thing. Like, I remember 2 years ago sitting here in front of this camera, and they had Jose Bautista as their leadoff hitter, who at that point he was not walking very often, and his batting average was low. So Sogard has hit 300. He's added some unexpected power. He gives them speed on the base pass, which they desperately need.
Yeah.
He's been very solid in the field. He has done everything well. Yes, he might walk away at the end of the season, but you know what? If you show him a little bit of loyalty, hey, you were the one that, you know, brought him to the dance when he started to play well. Maybe he's going to stick around. And if you have a good leadoff hitter, they need a good leadoff hitter, and he has been absolutely a good leadoff hitter. At least, I don't know. We don't know what these two players to be named later are.
No.
But if they are like single A prospects, I don't know. At some point, I know they're not anywhere close to the playoffs. They stink. But play out the year, and maybe you have a chance to re-sign them going forward for next year when your prospects are coming on. So I don't know. This whole sell everything no matter what, I'm not sold on it. I can see selling off assets that are going to walk anyways, but you're not necessarily gaining a whole much either.
They don't want to win. That's part of the problem. They don't want to win for the rest of the season. It's just going to take them out of draft consideration.
Yeah, because the other thing is a lot of people talked about how great he was with the young players.
Right.
They said, like, as far as sitting and chatting.
Well, you saw it on the broadcast where he was sitting chatting with young players in the dugout and, you know, explaining things to them and gesturing with them.
A de facto coach. Like, and the guy had the great attitude. Like, even to have him there, to have his attitude there for other players who's raised the level of his game beyond what people expected. I think you can't always be in such a rush to get rid of that.
Don't disagree. But in this case, so far, it's been addition by subtraction in the fact that it's opened up a spot for Bo Bichette to join the Toronto Blue Jays. And basically, Jamie, what he's done so far has been historic. You know, he's set a major league record for the most extra base hits in the first 9 games of his career with 10. He had another one today as well. We filmed this on Wednesday night, but he had another one this afternoon. He has set several team records already for extra base hits and what he's done in the early going. And I think he was hitting 411 going into today's game and 3 home runs as well. I mean, Jamie, they had to make room at some point for Bo. They did it at an odd time, though, and it's worked out. But he wasn't actually playing that well at AAA when they called him up.
No, but I think Bo Bichette was somewhat frustrated with the lack of a call-up. And he'd actually gone on the record as saying, you know, they could wait until he was 30 years old. He'd be a better player when he was 30 years old. But, I mean, what would be the point in that? So the Blue Jays are sort of making up this year for what they missed out on last year, which is they could have brought up Vladimir Guerrero Jr. last year, and they would have given up another year of control, but it would have been more exciting for the fans. They opted to keep him in the minors, gain that further year of control, and in 5 or 6 years, we'll probably thank them for that. But now that he's up, it's signaling the next wave, and the next wave includes Bo Bichette. It includes a few of these other guys, you know, that we were talking about before the show even started.
Yeah.
You know, your Rowdy Tellez has already gotten a few at-bats in, and, you know, there's a few other guys that are going to come through. And let's not forget, too, that Bo Bichette is playing a premium position.
Yeah.
It's very hard to get good shortstops. And right now the Blue Jays are stacked at middle infield and at catcher. And those are two positions that are very hard to solidify.
You know, they've done a great job, according to the Blue Jays, of getting these years of control of these players, 41 years of control for trading away 7 or something of that nature. Now, we'll see if those are good quality years of control or just guys you don't really want. That's I think, where they're kind of getting beat up. Ross Atkins was getting a little beat up by both media and fans on that angle of it. But, I mean, time will tell on whether that's good or bad. But they have, you know, been relatively slow to bring up, you know, Guerrero Jr. and Bichette, angling for this extra year of control that they've been after. And, I mean, I think the optics of what they've done this year with that, to me, has been maybe worse than some of the other things that they've tried to portray themselves, you know, with these trades and that kind of thing. Like, the optics of you know, being so cheap as to try to keep that extra year of control haven't been great for them, I don't think.
At the end of the day, though, I think a lot of, in sports, a lot of people are short-term thinkers, right? That whole tank now, you know, scorched earth, everything. And that's part and parcel with it. If they're talking about value and keeping control of players being that important, it actually made sense that they didn't bring Vladdy up for the first month, right? Because at the end of the day, does that 1 month really matter? And in this case, no. It's not like they were fighting for a pennant and that was the difference.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is you have to watch in all sports, but especially baseball, you know, avoid the peaks and valleys a little bit. And, you know, I've really enjoyed watching Bo the Flo. He's played really well. Kudos to him. Exceeding expectations by far. Who knew his first few weeks would have been so spectacular? But I do also want to point out, for instance, when Kevin Biggio came up, who's a great young prospect, you know, look at where he was hitting fourth in the lineup because he was lights out there for a few weeks. But after he had his first, you know, run through the league, they got a little more of a sense of how to pitch him. And then the grind sort of sets in a little bit. And you know, Kevin's still playing fairly well.
Yeah.
But a few errors have sort of rolled into his game and his average has steadily dipped. So, you know, we can expect with Bo probably the same thing too, right? He's going to come back down to earth a little bit.
He can't possibly continue to hit 411.
He can't, but... yeah. And remember this time, well, not this time last year, around this time last year, Rowdy Tellez, you know, he went on a pretty good tear at one point with home runs and stuff, but came back down to earth kind of thing.
Right.
So I think we all needed to just take a little breath. And yes, it's encouraging. It looks like Bo's going to be a really, really good player, but we can't expect this from him all the time, right?
No, and you know what? I mean, we've seen, you know, on the hitting side, he's made huge strides in what he looks like he's going to be, but he's made some rookie mistakes as well. I mean, he made a base running mistake last night where he was picked off by trying to steal and was caught red-handed there. And he's made some errors in the field as well, Jamie, but, you know, rookie mistakes for a rookie, and we're going to have to sort of make allowances for that growing pains, if you will.
Yeah, and I mean, that's simply part of having a young team. And, you know, they've got to learn how to be pros. They've got to learn how to, you know, you've got to learn basically how to lose before you can learn how to win. And that's what this team is learning right now.
Yeah.
They're sort of in that first step of learning, you know, what it means to play at the professional level, at the highest level of the professional baseball. But you've got to learn all those experiences, and that's what they're doing. We're going to see flashes of brilliance, which hopefully will grow, but then we're going to also see flashes of sort of, oh no, which we will. And I mean, your only hope at that point is that one starts to outweigh the other.
Yeah, they generally smooth out over time, and you know, 20-year-olds and 22-year-olds on in your lineup, it's just going to happen.
There was a game last night where I can't remember if it was the Nationals or Cardinals, but a player had successfully stolen second, and umpire gave it a big save, but it was a pretty close play.
Right.
I guess he thought maybe he was out and he didn't pay enough attention, so he actually left the bag. He started jogging a few steps off, and he got tagged out after. So he stole the bag, and then
he was out.
Then he was out after he was safe because, yeah, he had been safe on the steal, but then he...
Wow.
He didn't pay enough attention and left the bag and got tagged out.
It's all about focus. You got to be focused every second you're on the baseball diamond.
Yeah, it's such a long season like that. Those mental lapses are going to happen.
And why not learn them early with something like that? You know, have it happen earlier in your career and you learn a good hard lesson that sticks with you for the rest of your career about having that mental focus every second you're on the diamond.
Yeah. The J.R. Smith factor, I think they call that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about the Houston Astros, Toronto Blue Jays trade hooking up. Of course, the All-Star Derek Fisher. Oh, I guess not. It felt like he was for what he was traded for. But
the fundamentals, they always tell young ball players, keep your eye on the ball.
Yeah.
And Derek Fisher is all over that. And
so Derek Fisher coming to the Jays for Joe Biagini, Aaron Sanchez, and a pretty good outfield prospect in Cal Stevenson. I was doubly surprised to see him included in this mix as well, only for Derek Fisher. And Derek Fisher has split, you know, the last 3 years between the Houston Astros and AAA. And Jamie, I just felt like this was massive overpayment, but I guess it's really a ton of confidence that the Blue Jays brain trust have in the ability of Derek Fisher to be an impact player.
Yeah, and I mean, my reaction first hearing about this was, Blue Jays did what now? And that's still kind of where I'm at with it. I think, to be fair to Aaron Sanchez, he needed to get out of Toronto. I think that he's getting to the point where even if he was unwilling to admit it, he was unhappy there. I think that the staff was unhappy with what they were seeing from him, and that a fresh start was necessary, and that he got off to probably the freshest start he could have in Houston with
a no-hitter?
Six innings of no-hit baseball. I was upset.
Yes. How does his fingernail harden up as soon as he crosses the border? I don't know.
I was upset to see that he was sort of an add-on to Joe Biagini, who's pitched relatively well with the Blue Jays, former Rule 5 draft pick. And then, I mean, the very fact that they added a prospect and didn't bring any prospects back for a rebuilding team that, you know, isn't close to contention. They don't need another outfielder per se right now. It's a head-scratcher for me, and I can't pretend to understand it.
They must feel that Derek Fisher is going to be an all-star player and felt they had to pay this. Now, in fairness to them, Sanchez was 3-14 with a 6.07 earned run average, but a lot of people felt like, could he not contribute in the bullpen and be effective in that one-inning stint, even as a Toronto Blue Jay, and would he be able to handle mentally doing that? But he's been there, done that in the past. And, of course, obviously he started for the Houston Astros and put up a no-hitter, combined no-hitter with four other pitchers, including Joe Biagini.
Well, it's hard for a pitcher, I think, to go back and forth between being a reliever and a starter. And you've got a book right there on your desk beside you of a guy that did it very successfully. But, I mean, the way I always look at it is when you try and move a reliever into a starting position, you're running the risk of either getting Chris Sale or Daniel Bard, two guys that were dominant relievers. One became a dominant starter, and one's now out of baseball. And, I mean, Aaron Sanchez, I don't think, had any interest in going into the bullpen. That's probably where his best success would be. But if he doesn't want to be there...
I was going to say, at 3-14, why does he have a say in it? Like,
because if he's unhappy, he's not going to play well.
God, and that just... You hear this in baseball all the time. People don't run out their, you know, infield dribblers and stuff. They're being paid, like, some of them are being paid $35 million. You know what? Get over it. Play the game.
Run it out. Yeah,
run it out. And, yeah, go to the bullpen. If coach says go to the bullpen, go to the bullpen.
I would bring up the Troy Tulowitzki issue from the offseason where he said, if I'm not the starting shortstop, I'm basically going to take my ball and go home.
And he did.
Well, he didn't, though. The Blue Jays instead released him.
Well, he's gone home now.
They could have said, okay, and then suspended him without pay.
They could have.
But instead, he became the highest paid player on the Blue Jays to not play for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Or anyone else now.
Why are you signing these guys to, you know, $20 million contracts when they're not gamers, right? Like,
Jamie, you brought up another interesting aspect to this trade in the fact that Joe Biagini, for me, is the most valuable thing in that trade. With a 3.78 earned run average in 50 relief appearances for the Toronto Blue Jays, I mean, that in no small way is incredibly important. And only being 29, I mean, he's got a ton of years ahead of useful service. I felt like they kind of sold low on Joe Biagini a little bit here.
They did. And, I mean, I'll say it again. I know I already mentioned it, but, you know, he's former Rule 5 draft pick. And, I mean, those guys are really hit or miss. The other one, I don't know if the Blue Jays had another one since, but the one I remember was Glenn Sparkman, who was with them for a short time and eventually went back to Kansas City. But, you know, it's really a gamble. And you're committing to this guy for a full season, basically, on your active roster. And the Blue Jays put up with that for Joe Biagini. He rewarded them, and now they're sending him away. So I was upset with that more than Sanchez or Stevenson.
The guy's eaten up so many innings for them this year. Like, I know you're trying to make room for prospects to come in, but they've been desperate for pitching. And then you pass on a guy like that, and yeah, I don't know. That one was a head-scratcher. I can see they maybe needed to sweeten the pot, given that Sanchez has had so many injury issues last year.
But do they with for Derek Fisher? Like,
for Derek Fisher?
I was shocked.
And then they're also throwing in a prospect, too. So and it's like, also sweeten the pot, like, twice.
Okay, so let's take a look at Derek Fisher on his own, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, at the top end of what Derek Fisher could be, Jamie, what do you think that is?
I haven't seen Derek Fisher play enough really to make a solid or accurate assessment of that. From the stats that I've looked at, I mean, he could be a middle-of-the-pack journeyman outfielder from what I've seen. But like I said, I don't feel confident in making an accurate projection of who Derek Fisher will be later in his career.
At this point, if you look at his numbers, he gives us a lot of confidence that he's very similar to a Dalton Pompey.
Right.
Who they already had in the organization.
Didn't have to pay for.
So instead of giving up two roster players.
Well, in the prospect, too.
And right? A prospect for a Dalton Pompey who you already had and just sent down to the minors. So
yeah, it's a real head scratcher. I think a lot of people are struggling with this particular trade. And I think the other aspect of it is the Houston Astros have an incredible whisper in their pitching coach who immediately turns them into no-hit pitchers. But in the long term, you know, he's had really good luck with turning pitchers' careers around. Mm-hmm. And I really think, you know, that will play into this particular thing and make it look worse over time if, in fact, he's able to well, he's already had some impact, obviously. But in the long term, if he makes those two guys pitch extremely well, it's going to make it look worse.
So, yeah, and just speaking to the depth of the Houston Astros and to bring it in some local content, you know, last year they had a pitcher in the AAA level for Houston from Clinton,
okay,
Dixhorn. And his contract was actually bought out by a Korean League team.
Right.
But he actually put up very good numbers at AAA. I very much expected to see him make the major leagues. Like, you know, a kid who played some high school ball in Clinton, Ontario. That's kind of like a huge deal. But I think he saw the depth that was in that organization pitching-wise and realized he might not necessarily get to the MLB this year. So he thought it was best for his development to go over to Korea. But, there's a lot of teams that if you're at AAA and you pitch well and you're a young pitcher, you're sticking around for the next few years to get a taste of the big leagues, right?
Absolutely. Let's talk about just some of the other sort of periphery moves they made that are worth at least a mention or a quick comment. So they acquired right-handed pitcher Kyle Johnston from the Washington Nationals for Daniel Hudson, the right-handed relief pitcher. So Hudson was 6-3 with a 3.00 earned run average and 2 saves in 45 games this year for the Jays. But he's 32 years old. He had 48 strikeouts, allowed 38 hits and 23 walks. A solid reliever for sure, without question. But 32 years old, they get Johnston, 23 years old, 9-9 record with a 4.03 earned run average across 20 starts in Advanced A Potomac of the Carolina League this year. So striking out 100 batters in 105 innings, only 6'190", a right-handed pitcher. I mean, Jamie, like, I guess this guy's a legitimate, reasonable prospect that they got for him, but they also paid a good reliever for him as well.
They did. The thing that I think surprised me the most was that Daniel Hudson didn't end up with the Boston Red Sox.
Right.
And, I mean, Boston, of course, didn't add a reliever at all at the trade deadline, but it's good to see the Jays bringing in some young arms. I mean, a couple of years ago when they were in the throes of their playoff races, they sacrificed a lot of young arms to get there. And some of which have turned into
pretty good
major
players.
League starters, and some of which have not. But, you know, it's time to restock that cabinet. And then they've done it a little bit through the draft, but they're going to have to bring in some via trade as well. So I find it hard to complain or blame Atkins or Shapiro for that.
Yeah, this is a case where Hudson played really well, but his contract was up at the end of the year. And since he has, 6-3 with a 288?
Three earned run average.
Yeah, so he's going to get a lot of interest, right? He's a guy that was going to walk. So, I'm not too excited about Kyle Johnston. Hopefully it works out. But, yeah, like, even since then, he lost his one start with the high A. Is that Dunedin he's at? Yeah, he's with Dunedin right now.
Right.
So he's 9-10 at his high A. Hopefully something works out for him, but I'm not. It's not kind of a whippy-do, but at least you got something before Hudson walked out the door.
Jamie, I feel like they're throwing a bunch of darts at the dartboard and hopeful that they're going to hit on a couple, and if they do, and they probably will on a couple, but it feels like to me they have a plan, but it's hard to see it as a fan right now.
Yeah, and that's something that I've read, which is Shapiro and Atkins are highly respected baseball men, and despite the fans' frustration with the Blue Jays front office, that there is probably something going on, and they probably are making the right decisions despite what the fans might think.
Right.
So, I mean, really, we don't have any option other than to wait it out, see what happens. If eventually ownership gets tired of waiting and decides to bring in somebody else, that's what happens. Or if, like what happened in Cleveland, and these guys start to come up, they start to bloom at the major league level, then it was worth waiting. So, I mean, that's the thing that I would fall back on is, you know, in Cleveland, where these guys were before Toronto, they turned that into an AL championship roster.
Yeah.
So, I mean, basically, we would hope for the same thing here in Toronto.
I want to turn, if I may, throw it to, because you were talking off air before about Giles.
Right.
And a lot of people expected him to move, but you know, there was a couple of few little blips here and there that were kind of interesting little tidbits, because as we were approaching the trade deadline, there was some talk that he had voiced his opinion to some media that he wanted to finish the season at least with the Jays, that he was pretty comfortable up here. And then it was interesting to me because then shortly after that, you know, he wasn't eligible to be traded because he was on the IR. But even that was kind of interesting because, like, the injury, right, inflammation, you know how he got it?
It was something at home, wasn't it?
It was team massage.
Oh, yes, yes.
So after, you know, shortly after saying, you know, I'd really like to finish the season here, there's all this talk about him
suddenly
potentially being traded.
Oh.
Then all of a sudden he has inflammation in his shoulder brought on by a massage. It's like, that's
usually
kind of interesting.
My experience is usually that gets rid of inflammation, not brings it on. But
not brings it on, so it's like a massage-related injury. Like,
interesting.
I find that I have some conspiracy theories
curious
about that.
Curious timing, isn't it?
It's curious timing, yeah.
Well, I mean, let's look at the fact, too, that if you're a baseball general manager right now and you've got a contending team, which closer would you rather have, Roberto Osuna or Ken Giles, not considering off-field behavior? I mean, there's an argument that the Jays got the better player out of that trade.
Mm-hmm.
Their hand was forced, and they came up pretty well out of that.
Pretty
I think,
well
right
in that
now,
deal,
for sure.
I agree. Yeah.
I mean, like there's been a history with the Houston Astros. Roberto Osuna, Francisco Liriano, Teoscar Hernandez came back to them as part of that deal. And I mean, it's clear that the Toronto Blue Jays are comfortable dealing with the Houston Astros. So maybe they know something that we don't when it comes to guys like Derek Fisher.
Let's hope that they do, because they've certainly staked us out to some degree, I think, with the fans, their reputation on that trade, with giving up what the fans perceived as so much. And maybe it's not as, maybe we overvalue our own players and undervalue other people's players, but it just seemed like a stark difference for what we would have expected they would have gotten back in that trade. Like we kind of heard on Twitter and through social media that they had traded these guys, and we hadn't heard yet what the return was, and it was pretty underwhelming when we did.
Well, let's look at the fact, too, that this is a very small sample size.
Yeah.
If Aaron Sanchez and Joe Biagini had been absolutely blown out of the park in Houston, and Derek Fisher went 4-for-4, 5-for-5 with a couple home runs, we might be saying, oh, this was a great trade.
Yep.
And there's lots of time for that still to happen.
Absolutely, and you know what? Hopefully, he can be a solid player for the Toronto Blue Jays, and at the end of the day, if that happens, then so be it. You know, that'll be – it's just at a position that I felt like they had some depth there, and it was an odd thing. But we'll give them the benefit of the doubt there.
And we're saying with baseball that as much tradition as there is, there's always – you see things for the first time. And I don't think it's the first time it's happened, but it's the first time I've seen it happen, is Derek Fisher, his first plate appearance – with the Blue Jays, in fact, you know, officially wasn't a plate appearance because Randall Grichuk had fouled a ball that rocketed right into his face.
Had to leave.
And he couldn't finish the at-bat. And Derek Fisher was newly joined with the team, was put in to finish the at-bat. So officially, he already had two strikes against him, literally, when he walked into the batter's box. But officially, that ended up as a Randall Grichuk at-bat. He eventually struck out. But it's kind of interesting. I've never seen that where a player's first major league appearance with a team isn't officially his first major league appearance with a team.
And guys, let's be honest. So the optics of the first day of the trade were really poor for the Toronto Blue Jays. You had both pitchers in that trade combining on a no-hitter, and the player you received in return gets a ball off his face because he misplayed it. And the timing of that just, you know, was not great in terms of the optics of it. But in the long term, it doesn't have any impact, really.
That's right. And I mean, just to go off what Andy said, too, let's not forget the player by the name of Adam Loewen, who had one at bat. It was a hit by pitch, I believe, and he had to wait years to come back and finally do another at bat.
Oh, because was he the one that was hit in the face?
I believe so.
Yeah, he was hit in the face, and it took a long time to come back, and then he
I believe he was part of the Blue Jays system for a while.
Yes, he was, yeah.
Yeah, and then he had one more plate appearance after that.
And I think he struck out.
Yeah, but he at least got the chance. He worked his way back up through the minors, and then he was a late season call up. They gave him that shot, saying, "You know,
you deserve it.
You deserve it for all the work you've done." Yeah,
yeah. Well, let's talk about the other minor move that Toronto did. That was a trade they completed with the Chicago Cubs. They acquired right-handed pitcher Thomas Hatch in exchange for right-handed pitcher David Phelps. And so Phelps, 32, he had thrown 17 innings with the Jays, 3.63 earned run average, 18 strikeouts after recovering from Tommy John surgery. But a veteran, 32 years old, a career 30-33 record, but solid 3.88 earned run average across 571 career innings. Hatch, 24, a 4-10 record with a 4.59 earned run average across 21 starts for Double E Tennessee this year. So again, you know, a younger prospect for an older guy that, you know, is a role player in your bullpen. What do you think, guys?
It's very similar to Daniel Hudson.
Right.
And I mean, the Blue Jays took a flyer on David Phelps. David Phelps had a good couple of years when he was younger, you know, with the New York Yankees and a couple of other clubs. But, you know, I really see it as very similar to Daniel Hudson. They got an arm who's young, controllable, with potentially untapped upside for a guy who the Cubs know what they're getting and were comfortable making that gamble.
I agree. Yeah. It's, you know, it's not a whole lot more to be said on that one, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So as we sit here right now, the Jays in their last 10 games are 7-3. I think somewhat unexpected 7-3, probably. We've seen a ton of potential from their young players. There's no question about that. They've led the charge of this. But the surprising thing might be that their pitching has relatively held up and was actually among the major league leaders in the last 10 games for earned run average. And they're basically doing it by committee all of a sudden, because at the end of the day, you know, their leading pitcher right now has like 4 or 5 wins. It's an adventure every night, it seems, on the pitching side. But so far, they've, with Baylor Twine and Shoelaces, they've kind of cobbled it together, and we've seen some potential. I particularly have really liked a couple of young pitchers that they have. Jacob Wagesback, for me, has shown really well in the few starts that he's had. He's looked good. He looks like a guy that could be a number 4, number 5 starter. But just generally, I mean, what has your impression been?
Well, let's not forget, too, there are some question marks that are coming back later in the season. Guys like Elvis Luciano,
right?
Another Rule 5 pick. Can't remember exactly where he came out of, but, you know, they'll have to see what they've got in him. And they've got to, as I understand it, keep him on the active roster a little bit next season because of how much he's been injured.
Right.
But, I've been happy with what I've seen from guys like Trent Thornton. Sean Reed Foley is very highly touted. And, I mean, I'm more than anything, I think, excited to see guys like Alek Manoah, who's several years away yet, but, you know, there's a reason that the Blue Jays took him as early as they did.
Even a guy like Gavilio looks like he's playing a decent role all of a sudden, a solid fill-in middle relief type guy that, you know, can come in and give you some innings, 1 or 2 or 3 maybe, whatever you kind of need, but he's pitched pretty well, I think, of late in his recent appearances.
And if they're nervous about not having enough pitchers, they could just do what the Colorado Rockies did and set up a pitching tent outside of the Rogers Center. I mean, I know that guy signed with the Oakland Athletics, but I mean, if anybody out there has ever seen the movie Invincible, then that was very similar circumstances. So
someone,
your major league dream may not be dead.
Hit 96 miles an hour in the tent, and they signed him. Yeah, it makes for good storytelling anyways, and see how it plays out.
But he was already a professional pitcher, I think, which a lot of people were missing.
That part doesn't always come out in the telling of the tale.
Well, it makes it for a better story if he isn't, right?
So, since we're talking trade deadline stuff too, maybe we could segue into this week's From the Clark Archives.
Absolutely. Take it away.
Yeah, and since we were focusing on trade deadlines, what we did is we dabbled back to 1987. And the headline here is, I know our man Adam is going to be getting that up on the screen for us. For our podcast listeners, you can go to our Twitter feed and download for free or listen online to our podcast of each of these episodes on Podomatic. It's 913 Baseball Talk if you're trying to find it on Podomatic. The headline is Alexander hurls Detroit to win, And if you're of a certain vintage, you'll remember Doyle Alexander was a pretty solid journeyman pitcher that spent some good time with the Jays, too.
Yep.
I always remember him explaining the circle change on air, the way through his changeup, where he actually made like the okay sign and wrapped the ball. And exact same delivery as his fastball, but a lot more drag with his fingers. So slowed it down, and he had a lot of success with that changeup. So this is from a Kentucky New Era, and it's an American Press piece by Ben Walker. September 5th, 1987. And the context of this one is he had been 5-10, Doyle Alexander had been, with the Atlanta Braves. I forgot he had played for them, actually.
Yeah.
And Detroit wanting to make a run at winning it all. They already had Jack Morris and Walt Terrell and Frank Tanana in their rotation. So they managed to pick up for a minor league pitcher. They managed to pick up Doyle Alexander, who rewarded them by going 4-0 with a 2.17 ERA in his first few weeks with the team. And in this, the hype of this article, they were saying it's one of the best pickups by a team, you know, trying to add to their roster in August of all time. But we're saying, you know, time tells on this, and that's partly why I went with this story. I did have another one where it had Doyle Alexander, and it was he had actually got lit up in a game. It was Billy Martin's 1,000th win.
Okay.
And he got lit up in a game, and the management blasted him because they said he apparently had broken a bone in his hand, punching a dugout phone booth.
Okay.
And so he had been out, and then he'd played one game in their AAA and then insisted on coming back to the bigs. And they did, and they're like, oh, he let his teammates down. He wasn't ready to be back in the big leagues. He got lit up. At any rate, I didn't go with that article because this one – it was interesting who that minor league pitcher was that they traded for.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's where the book on the counter comes
in. We look
in.
on camera to the book by John Smoltz. Oops. So,
you want to run with that, Jamie?
Yeah, that was – the funny thing is John Smoltz actually grew up as a Detroit Tigers fan and was in their system and was traded for Doyle Alexander. So he became one of the more notable – members of a dominant Braves pitching staff.
For sure.
With guys like Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux. And that book, actually, which I've read, chronicles a little bit of his Major League story and largely focuses on his forgettable last season with Major League Baseball, where he split it between the Boston Red Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals. But certainly talks about him moving back and forth between being a starter and being a closer. We talked a little bit about players making that transition earlier in the show. And he really communicates some of those experiences quite well. So if you haven't read that book, I recommend it. It's a fun read for any sports fan.
It was a different time in terms of what general managers were willing to give up in terms of prospect capital. So this guy, you know, was a blue chipper. They gave him up. They had to. Now today, it feels like these guys in charge of the, you know, the general managers that rely on all this analytical data are not willing to part with, for a temporary solution, a high-end prospect. And Jamie, we saw it play out certainly at this trade deadline, and we've seen it maybe in the last couple as well, where, you know, you don't see those two guys that are going to be future stars traded for, you know, a couple high-end players to win the World Series anymore.
You really don't. And I mean, look at these teams that have made those trades to send, you know, big name players. I'm talking about the trade between the Miami Marlins and the Toronto Blue Jays, the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Boston Red Sox. Neither one of the teams that acquired all that talent won a World Series. And I mean, it was like, it's a lot more of a money game now than it ever was prior. It's, you know, we talk about hockey trades. There's fewer baseball trades now. They're more money trades. And I mean, you look at a team like the New York Yankees, who were aging and, you know, they had some difficulties a number of years ago. And how did they respond? They responded by bringing in CeCe Sabathia, Mark Teixeira, AJ Burnett, you know, a few of those other guys who were right in their prime. But had they given up guys like Gary Sanchez or Aaron Judge, they wouldn't be competitive now. So it's all about really the talent management, which we've really seen grow in some of these big markets.
And statistically, too, something interesting about this article. And by the way, I should have said you can go to our right now it's posted on our Hockey Talk 913. Soon we're going to have our own Twitter feed up there for Baseball Talk. We'll have it up there soon. But you can read the article at your leisure, but something that's amazing too is it's recounting an 11-2 win by Detroit over Texas Rangers, and it was during Doyle Alexander's 37th birthday. So not only did they give up a blue chipper in John Schmoltz for him, but they gave John Schmoltz up for a 37-year-old pitcher, and he was facing Charlie Huff, who became a really good knuckleballer who extended his career. So they were pointing out Charlie Huff was the starter for Texas, and that Doyle Alexander and Charlie Huff had been teammates 17 years earlier in the big leagues. You know, we don't see that as often.
No, you don't really see
those old pitchers that hang around on their savvy and control and movement.
And why
like
don't we see more guys with the knuckleball? It's a really effective pitch.
Yeah.
I understand it's hard to perfect. But, Tim Wakefield, obviously, a number of years ago, was successful with it. But in recent history, R.A. Dickey, of course, too. But, in recent history, we've seen, one or two guys. But it's almost unhittable, or it's really hittable. But either way, you can win the Cy Young with it if you're really good at it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, it's a very specialty pitch. You don't see a lot of players throwing a forkball or a screwball either. Mm. So, for us to single out the knuckleball may not be fair.
Maybe not.
But for those guys that can perfect it, it can really extend their careers into their 40s. But, the player, I think, in my lifetime that's played the longest was not a knuckleballer. It was Jamie Moyer,
right,
who played until he was 49 years old. So it's really about managing your body, managing your talent, and that's going to help manage your career.
At the trade deadline, we obviously saw the Houston Astros kind of go all in and getting Zach Greinke as well, who is a phenomenal starting pitcher, as we know, an all-star and one of the best pitchers in Major League Baseball. They paid fairly heavy, I think, for him in terms of some of the prospect capital that they gave up, probably more so than any other trade by far.
It was four prospects, right?
Exactly.
Fairly good ones, yeah.
But it was the only trade really approaching the kind of prospect capital that we were talking about.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Zach Greinke, have been for years. One of my favorite Zach Greinke stories was one I read in the old Sportsnet magazine, which was when he was pitching with the Los Angeles Dodgers, and he was asked by catcher AJ Ellis how he would improve the team. And he said, "I'd trade you because your value would never be higher." And Zach Greinke, of course, had some trouble with the limelight of baseball and being uncomfortable with that. So I loved him, the story of him getting over that and becoming the player that he's become. Maybe he's never quite reached the heights that he was with Kansas City when he first started out, but I'd really be happy to see him, having overcome so much, be successful with the Houston Astros. And I know that doesn't really answer your question, but that's what I wanted to mention.
A good, interesting sidelight.
Yeah.
But you know what? Give the Houston Astros credit. They went for this thing and they paid. They probably got a good deal from the Jays. I think there's no question about that for a couple of players and a prospect. But they paid for Greinke. They went. No one else would pay more, obviously, or else that deal wouldn't have been made. And they certainly are contenders for the World Series. I think there's no question about that, Andrew.
Absolutely, yeah. You add him in there with Verlander and what they have in the field there with Altuve and such. They're pretty good. Yeah, they're a good-looking team.
Absolutely.
I wonder why they didn't bring back Dallas Keuchel after all that.
Yeah.
Could have for
nothing. Yeah, exactly. It's interesting.
Just money.
An interesting stat I saw yesterday on team home runs since June the 10th. Okay. What team do you think in Major League Baseball has hit the most home runs since June the 10th?
Since June 10th, it would be the Blue Jays.
It is the Blue Jays. Yep. This is a stat as of yesterday, but they had 88 home runs. The Twins had 84, Yankees 82, Braves 82, Dodgers 81. That's pretty startling stat for the kind of power surge we've seen, in particular from a lot of these young players from the Jays. But
especially when you factor in like Rowdy Tellez
is gone.
Triple A. He had 14 homers before he went down, but that was basically all he had done. He was striking out at a alarming rate, right?
Yes.
So he's back down there to maybe learn how to be a little more selective, which quite frankly, a lot of Jays have had to go through that battle this year, right? Some have succeeded and some haven't, but yeah, so get rid of Rowdy and then you go on a home run tear.
I guess I was just somewhat surprised that they were number one. You know, we've definitely seen them hit a lot of home runs, but I didn't realize it was quite at that level of elite being the number one team. Now, I know it's a relatively small sample size of, you know, a couple of months, 7 weeks kind of thing, but still, Jamie, I mean, it speaks to the level of potential this team has.
It does. I mean, like, I look back on even the short time I've been following the Blue Jays, and I say short, it's probably close to 15 years
right
now, but and I mean, I look, and that's how the Blue Jays have won in my lifetime, is by hitting home
long
runs.
Ball.
You know, it was, you know, when I was a kid, it was Carlos Delgado. Then it became, you know, Vernon Wells. Then it became Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. And you know, next it's going to be guys like Vladdy Jr. and Bo Bichette. And I mean, they've never won with the ace pitching. And I mean, I say that with all due respect to guys like Roy Halladay, AJ Burnett, even Marcus Stroman. I mean, they've had some very good pitchers, but that's never been their calling card. Their calling card has been the power. It's been the bat. And I'm excited to see the next generation.
It's interesting because they were saying how numbers are down across Major League Baseball, at least 20 of their cities, numbers of attendance is down. And they're saying analytics has really driven up this whole idea that if you don't put the ball in play, right? In other words, baseball is oriented towards strikeouts and home runs. And they're saying it's not really resonating with fans. And I got to be honest, I like seeing the ball in play. It was more fun to me. Like, can they turn that double play or not? Can they run out that infield single? I don't know. I find that interesting, seeing them crank the ball over the fence. Like, I played the game growing up. I kind of liked the hit and runs, added some interesting aspects to it. When we got to the McGuire, Sammy Sosa, steroid, you know, over the fence, it was great for the explosion of baseball media. They love those sound bites and those little 19-second shots. But it made baseball dreadful. You know, just standing watching these guys launch balls. And, you know, right this week we have another 80-game suspension, right? A lot of people have been saying with this orientation towards strikeouts and home runs, are we going to start to see PEDs sneak it back into the game, right? And there's some indication there might be. But anyway.
Well, number one, did they ever leave?
Did they ever leave, right? They are just finding more harder to detect.
Number two, like, I mean, I really enjoyed when Alex Anthopoulos was the GM of the Toronto Blue Jays. Because, I mean, it was the most exciting time for, you know, since the year I was born, that for Blue Jays fans. But it almost used to make me crazy how much they invested in power over everything else. I remember watching them and thinking, geez, they really need to add an arm, a pitcher.
Yeah,
what did they do? They signed Luke Scott to a minor league deal. And Luke Scott was a power guy, but I don't think he ever actually played for the Blue Jays. If he did, it was for a very short time. His best seasons were with the Orioles.
We have about a minute out there. One thing I did, though, and I noticed when the Jays were in the playoffs a few years ago against Cleveland, I think when you get into the playoffs, you need to be able to play the game in different ways, right? The
Absolutely.
Power can take you so far, but once you get into the playoffs, you do need to be able to, you know, have speed on the base pass to pressure teams, especially late in the season like that, right? So you need to have the speed game. You obviously need to have the defense, right? And then you need to be able to throw a lot of different looks at them.
Now, Steve,
we got 45 seconds, just so you guys know.
Yep,
so, yeah.
Yep. Just Steve had an interesting little comment before the show started airing that the Jays may have another pitcher that you don't necessarily think of as a.
Yes. So, option. Luke Maley, their catcher, actually has the lowest earned run average this year among any pitcher that has appeared for the Toronto Blue Jays. Two appearances, two games played, two innings pitched. He's allowed one hit and no runs and struck out three. And he leads them in earned run average. So there you go. What a way to end on baseball talk. Luke Maley, the best pitcher of the Toronto Blue Jays. That's another edition of Baseball Talk. We'll be back next week with some more chat right here on Whiteman TV.